What's up, college basketball fans? Welcome back into the Sidelines Podcast. I'm your host, Evan Daniels, college basketball insider over at FS1, as well as the director of basketball recruiting at 24/7 Sports. Today's episode of the Sidelines Podcast is the 52nd episode, and I'm pretty excited about today's guest. Utah Jazz guard and potential rookie of the year, Donovan Mitchell, joins the show, and we discussed his rise to stardom in the NBA, playing against LeBron James, a guy that he grew up idolizing, and why he doesn't care if he wins the Rookie of the Year award. After that interview with Donovan Mitchell, I broke down a couple players that I think are flying below the radar in college basketball season in terms of NBA draft status. Before we get to both of those things, I want to make sure that you are subscribed to the Sidelines Podcast. You can do that over on Apple Podcasts and or your favorite podcast app. If you want to support this podcast, would love it if you left a rating and or a review. You can also shoot me a note over on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Evan Daniels. Would love to know what you think about the show. Without further ado, let's jump to that interview with Utah Jazz guard, Donovan Mitchell.
It's time to go minute with Evan Daniels. Send it in, big fella.
Now let's welcome in current Utah Jazz guard and possible rookie of the year, Donovan Mitchell, to the Sidelines with Evan Daniels podcast. Donovan, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing great, man. I have to admit, I'm really excited about this podcast, maybe more so than any of the ones I've done. And partly is the reason for that is, you know, I kind of saw where you started, and it's been pretty cool to see how much you've developed over the last 4 or 5 years. If I told you this time last year, you'd be averaging 18.5 points a game in the NBA in your first 38 games, what would your reaction be?
Man, I would definitely think you're lying, to be honest. You know, this whole thing is kind of a crazy experience. And, yeah, definitely didn't see this coming at all.
Let's talk about your early years. And I think one of the things people may not realize is you weren't this highly ranked recruit early on in high school. In fact, you weren't really known until like that type of guy, really until your final summer and senior year.
Yeah. The early years are kind of going on the rail. I was still indecisive about if I wanted to play basketball or baseball. Then my injury, you know, that happened my sophomore year really changed my outlook, and that really changed everything. And that's when I started focusing solely on basketball.
You mentioned those injuries. You broke your wrist, and it was that was a big summer for you in terms of trying to get seen by college coaches, because you were still pretty under the radar at that point. How much did that injury and having to sit out kind of change your outlook on things?
It allowed you to develop a sense of hunger that, you know, you never really thought you might have had. I think it really changed my mindset. You know, you realize that this could be taken away at any moment. And I know it's kind of a deep thought, but when you're out for so long, you have time to think. That was one of the biggest takeaways I had from that injury, was this could be taken away at any moment, so why not give it your all, you know, while you have this opportunity to. I think that's what kind of changed everything for me.
Now, I know Slam Magazine had a nice feature about you, how you wanted to be a professional baseball player. So tell me a little bit about that. How did you decide to drop baseball and just focus on hoops?
It was at the end of it. It's really happened. I think I went out there and I just, the sense that I wanted to play basketball more, I just felt like basketball was the one I wanted to be playing. That's where my heart was. That's where my mind was. And I think that was the biggest change, was me getting hurt.
Now, I remember seeing you your senior season at the National Prep Showcase. I think you were playing with Brewster. Actually, that was your junior season. And you were really impressive athletically, but the jump shot wasn't quite there yet. Is that where you think you've grown the most over the last couple of years?
I would say, yeah, for sure. Just being able to continue. I started it, you know, at Louisville. I think that was the biggest change when I just started changing the arc of my jump shot and focusing a lot more on you know, holding my flaws from staying in my shot, because a lot of times, you know, just kind of shoot it and just pray that it goes in. Instead of having the confidence that, you know, that what's going in. I think that was the biggest difference. And once I changed that mindset, it's really helped me develop a better jump shot and get and raise my percentage, one, and my confidence as well.
Now, I remember Reebok camp in Philadelphia. It was your final summer. That's kind of where you really took off.
Yeah, in Philly, that was where I got my awesome move. Like, that's where I really, you know, I think that what a conversation I had about my jump shot, you know, just shooting freely, I think was the biggest thing. First of all, we had a really good team. Me, Justin Simon, Derek Jones, Jared Reuter. Yeah, I forget the rest. But I remember that was like the big four. Jared and Justin and I all go on the Rooster. So just we had that connection. And just being able to go out there and just showcase what I could do. That was a lot of pressure, obviously. Having those coaches there, definitely nerve-wracking. But just enjoying the time and going out there and just playing freely. I think once I found the success doing that, I think that's just what carried over for the rest of up until now.
Now, I think that was the event where Louisville assistant at the time, Kenny Johnson, brought Rick Pitino to come see you. And then you committed, I think, a month or so later.
Because that was in July. Yep, around there.
Can you pinpoint anything that happened that summer? Because that was like the catapult, man. And then you mentioned the big season at Brewster, but like your confidence just seemed to get, I mean, raise higher and higher and higher. Can you pinpoint anything that happened or a time period that just kind of that you got it?
I would say, you know, that offer really changed, you know, when I offered and all those schools started offering, you know, you started to be like, you know what, maybe I am, you know, kind of pretty good, you know, like, not all the way to believe that, because I didn't really believe that until about a few months ago, but, you know, you get a different confidence when you like all these schools, you know, it's, I wouldn't call it cockiness, it's more just assurance, you know, and I think, or a lot of kids, you know, sometimes worry, are they good enough? You know, how are they compared to most kids? Like, I'm not right. I wouldn't rank highly. You know, I never had the hype behind my name. And I was okay with that. I mean, obviously I wasn't okay with it, but I was okay with being under the radar, just kind of going there trying to attack people who didn't really know who I was. And that's the system that that's how they play. Those are their guards. You know, Russell and Peyton Piva, Eric Sosa, all those guys. And I think once I fell in love with that school, I think that's when I really just said, you know what, let's just go out there and show these other schools that they like, you know, that I'm that good, and just try and prove that to some people wrong. I think was really what motivated me. You know, I think that was the biggest thing.
Now, I spoke to your former coach at Brewster, Jason Smith, and he told me one of the most impressive things about you is that you were elected as student body president after only being at that school for 1 year. How'd you manage to pull that off?
I wasn't originally going to do it, to be honest. And then, you know, I talked to some people and they said I might actually have a shot at winning it. You know, I just made a point to go and be friendly to everyone, be nice, you know, and not have that same, I don't know how to say it, like, kind of have the same stigma that normal athletes have. Not having the same stigma that athletes have, you know, kind of being the jock that doesn't study, doesn't do his homework, isn't socially with people, just kind of going out there and trying to prove that, you know what, I am something different. You know, I pride myself in being different, and I think that's what really kind of sparked me going out there doing that.
Well, let's fast forward a little to your sophomore season at Louisville. You jumped from 7.5 points to 15.5 points a game, and you really took on a leadership role, and you particularly stepped up when Quentin Snyder went down with an injury. You were able to play with the ball more in your hands. What changed for you during your sophomore season? Because it just seemed like from a confidence standpoint, you were playing at a different level.
I would say, you know, when a guy is down, you know, the biggest thing is being able to fill that void. You know, by no means was I trying to take over. That wasn't my mindset. It's more so of one of our important pieces is down, so somebody has to step up, you know. And I took that upon myself. I've always been that person to kind of take things take things, you know, kind of upon myself to be a leader. And I think that's the quality I've had for a while. And I think that's what really kind of changed, you know, that's what really changed. I was really focused on looking the pieces down again in a crucial time of year, and someone has to step up. And I said, why not have it be me?
How much did playing for Rick Pitino help prepare you for what you've encountered in the NBA so far?
He really helped me because when he pushed me to new heights, you know, I think the biggest thing. You know, I had all the tools there. He kind of sharpened them, I think, I would say. You know, I was always a guy who worked hard, you know, but he pushed me to work harder. Always a guy who was confident, you know, always a guy who was hungry and tenacious, and he just accelerated that, you know, kind of brought it out in me in a different way. And I think that's what I respect most about him, because outside of him being a great person, he brings the best out of every one of his players, regardless of what you may feel about yourself. You know, he made me a better player as well, and he taught me a lot of life lessons too, and that's a lot of things people don't know about him, is he's a great coach, but he's also a great person.
Have you talked to him since everything that happened at Louisville the past couple months?
I actually saw him today. Yeah, I saw him. We talked today. He was at our practice and whatnot. It was really cool to see him, though.
Awesome. Well, walk me through the process following your sophomore year. I remember you texted me saying you were going to weigh your options. But when you left for workouts in California, you didn't seem decided on anything.
Yeah, when I went to go to California, I would pay for my trip, pay for all of it. And I think I didn't know. Like, I had no idea, like, at all. And I think, you know, God puts things in your life to kind of, I don't know how to say it, but things in your life. And he saw something I didn't. You know, and I, like I said, that goes back to having that confidence I talked about, you know, earlier. I had confidence in myself, but, you know, the NBA, it's the NBA, you know what I mean? This isn't college, you know. This is, like, if you leave, you know, the biggest thing that people don't understand, like, say, oh, easily make that jump, but a lot of people, you know, if you leave and you don't get drafted, like, that's it, you know? Like, there's no more free tuition, there's no more, you know, there's no fallback. I think that was the big scare for me, was I didn't know how good I was, and I didn't know if I was good enough to make this a living and earn this for my, you know what I mean? I knew I would work hard enough. I just didn't know if the results would pan out. And all it took was 1 week, and like I said, I didn't unpack my college dorm. You know, my stuff was still there. It just took 1 week, and never happened to that. After having the conversation with Chris Paul and Paul George, changed my mindset. And that's when I really felt like I belonged.
Well, what did they say to you that kind of, you know, urged you to go ahead and do this?
You know, it wasn't anything different that my agent and everybody was saying. But growing up, you always hear the agents are, you don't listen to them. All they want to do is, all they want to do is get you to go to the NBA and train on. Like, they don't always have the best interest for you. You know, that's what you always hear in those NCAA meetings in high school and all that. You know, the videos I'm talking about, right? The ones that, like, played every AAU event. So, like, I'm listening to that. I'm like, yeah, you guys are just saying that, you know? And I tell them to this day, I'm like, dude, I thought you guys were just lying. You know, they're saying, man, you're doing well. Like, man, you can hold your own. And I'm like, yeah, like, kind of believe you guys, but I appreciate, like, you saying all this, you know. And then they pretty much said the same thing. They said, I can make an impact in this league if I just keep working hard. And when they said that, I was like, maybe this is the right move.
So you make the decision, obviously, to stay in the draft. Walk me through draft night. What were kind of your range of emotions, especially after the first five or so picks, when, you know, you could have been called at pretty much any of those spots?
I originally thought I was going to Charlotte and New York. You know, my league started to slide a little bit in the draft. And so I'm like, man, like, you know, first of all, I'm in the green room. So I was like, man, like, so I think that means I'm going in lottery. Like, that's what I was thinking. And, you know, as the New York picked and then Charlotte picked and get to Detroit, I'm like, all right, I killed that one. workout. You know, I was really good. You know, I shot it really well. I didn't miss a shot in my pick at that workout. I'm gonna go definitely go in there. They picked Luke. And then after that, I didn't work out for Denver. So now I'm kind of scrambling in my head, like, all right, 14th Miami. I didn't have a good workout in Miami. 15th Portland, maybe I go there, and the list goes on. So I'm like, man, I might start slotting. You know, what if I did make the wrong decision? You know, like all that stuff is creeping in my head. You know what I mean? And I heard that Utah traded, and that was my first workout. And I was so excited when I found out I was going to Utah. I've never been happier because that was the first workout I had. Never been to Utah except for my workout, and it was amazing. They treated me amazing when we got there for the workout, and you just never forget how nice they are, how great of people they are. And now that I'm here, I see that it's all genuine. You know, it's not just because you're here for a workout. It's genuine, and they really care, and they want to be the best.
You obviously made a great decision for yourself, and you said it. I mean, Utah seems like a great fit for you. It's been a great fit for you. What has all this been like, you know, not only just playing so well, but all the attention, the accolades? You know, you've been on SportsCenter before, I'm sure, but getting on, you know, the highlight shows and all that kind of stuff.
In a word, crazy. I tell people this all the time, like, you know, every basket that goes in is kind of like, wow, I did that, you know, and not so much that, like, I'm making baskets, but, like, I'm doing it in the NBA. And, you know, a lot of people, like, a lot of guys in the NBA feel like they belong, and a lot of guys will say, yeah, I expected to be here. You know, like you know, like, that's not telling you. Like, I had no clue. Like, just a year ago, I don't tell people this a lot, but, you know, just a year ago, I was watching the finals screaming at the screen, you know what I mean, when KD hit the shot against Bron. Now I'm having a conversation with them after games, you know what I mean? Like, just a year ago, I had a poster of this man in my room, you know, and now I'm playing against him and going against him in the final moments of the game. You know what I mean? So when I take moments, and I don't try to as much because that's why I kind of get off course and kind of get distracted, but I take moments and I'm like, man, like, this is insane what's going on. Yeah, I don't ever get used to it.
There's that Drake line, and that's around the time that your idols become your rivals. How much does that ring true for you right now?
Completely true. I think it applies. You know, I was at the finals, and I talked to Draymond a lot. He pretty much told me, like, that it'll turn into that, you know. Guys just start idolizing, you know, it's going to come for your head now. You know, especially when you start making noise and start doing well, they're going to come for you. You just got to be able to be ready and handle it.
It seems like every player's kind of had that welcome to NBA type moment. What was yours? What's yours been?
I think when Ron and D-Wade came up to me at the end of the game and talked to me, because, like I said, you know, growing up watching him, them both, actually, I think that was the biggest welcome to the NBA moment so far.
You said Russ when you talked to Russ?
I think when Ron and Dwayne Wade came up to me, but, you know, when Russ came up to me too, it was definitely a special moment. But LeBron is in my, like, kind of like my idol since I was really young. You know, Russ is more, I would say, newer to the league than Ron is, but both were amazing experiences. Don't get me wrong, it was really cool, but I think LeBron was kind of like the, all right, you're here moment. I just got to keep it going.
What has all those type of moments been like after the game? Because it seems like so many of these guys are like showing support and wanting to give advice. It's almost like the NBA is kind of trying to help out their own. And you've seen this with a couple different guys. It'd be Chris Paul talking to Jason Tatum, or you. I think LeBron even put on, you know, you said he's a guy you grew up following. LeBron put on Instagram and he called you the young king.
Yeah. It definitely is. It's awesome. But, you know, in the same way, people, like, it's a great experience, but I want to beat, like, you know, I want to beat those guys, you know. It's tough doing that after losses, and I wish we could definitely do it after, like, wins and whatnot, but definitely want to beat those guys and we definitely got our revenge against some of them, at least, or got to that chance against some of them, but I want to hopefully next year continue to do that. But it's an incredible experience.
In an interview with Bleacher Report, you said you keep a small circle that consists of your mom, your sister, And then you said in maybe Chris Paul. A 9-time NBA All-Star is not a bad mentor to have. what's been the best advice he's given you to date?
I think it's always good when you you have somebody in your corner that has had experience and knows what he's doing and has had success doing it. I think the biggest thing, you know, when I started playing well, you have a guy that can tell you that this isn't like I won the Rookie of the Month award, and you know that's not it, this is not why we're here, that's not why we came in the league, And I see a guy that could be real and honest with you like that. I think that's genuine when you have a guy who can be like, look, there's a lot more left for you to do, and I think having a guy like that in your corner. Is amazing.
You're in strong contention for Rookie of the Year and kind of what you were just talking about, the Rookie of the Month stuff. That's ultimately you're trying to play for more than that, but you're contending for Rookie of the Year with guys like Ben Simmons and Jason Tatum. Give me your case. Why do you think that's a type of award that you've earned? Obviously there's a ways to go in the season, but halfway through,
honestly, I don't care, to be honest. I tell people all the time, like, that's an award for the best rookie, obviously. And, I don't want to look at this award as, like, kind of saying, oh, I was the second best or the third best. I was the best to my team. That's the biggest thing for me, like, being the best for my team in any way that I can. If I win Rookie of the Year, then I'm excited and I'll definitely be honored having it, but it's not the end all. I know a lot of people, that's all they really talk about, because when it comes to rookie awards, that's really the award that is out there. And, I just want to be able to, one, make the playoffs. That's the biggest thing. And being able to become the best teammate and being better in my role with the team.
I know you're a hoops junkie, and I'm sure you've watched some college this year. Did any of these freshmen stick out to you as guys that might be the number one pick? Is there anybody that you would take one?
Number one pick, Bagley and Ayton and Trey Young are probably my three. Colin Sexton's really good too. Those are, I would say, the top four guys. They're playing well right now, but I think it all toss up to being what that number one team needs. A lot of people say, oh, Bagley's number one, I would pick, or Ayton, or it could be Trey Young, or it could be Yummy, but if a team doesn't need a big, then there's no need in picking Marvin Bagley, what I mean? Or it's DeAndre. I think this is all going to come down to who do they need.
I'm curious of your take, because you're someone that benefited a great deal from going to college, but the one-and-done rules gotten a lot of a talk lately. Do you have an opinion on if these players should, guys – in high school should be able to make that leap straight to the league, or did you like how the rule is now?
I think, in my opinion, I don't have an opinion, honestly, actually. That's actually a good question. I haven't really put much thought into that. I think as far as off the court, I think guys have a lot to learn. Being that young, coming into the league, I think that'll be the hardest challenge as opposed to on-the-court stuff. That's a tough one. I think the off-the-court stuff will be the hardest thing, though, to kind of for the guys to learn at that point in time.
What's been the hardest adjustment for you off the court?
The downtime has been something. Just got to be able to find something to do. I think it's been the biggest adjustment for me, for sure.
Last question, Don, before I let you go. If you weren't hooping, if you weren't playing basketball, what do you think you'd be doing with your life?
Baseball, 100%. 100%. Definitely baseball. I could definitely see myself being a baseball player.
Donovan, man, I appreciate your time and jumping on the Sidelines podcast, man. I really appreciate it.
Evan, thank you so much. It's been awesome.
This is Roy Williams.
The performance from the start that could not have been any finer. North Carolina is the 2009 national champion.
You're living to the sidelines with Evan Daniels.
We'd like to once again thank Donovan Mitchell for jumping on the Sidelines podcast. Really enjoyed that conversation with him. It's been fun to watch his development. As I mentioned in that interview, I saw him his junior year of high school in early November at that National Prep Showcase. And that's when, you know, I think it was pretty evident that he had a lot of talent, but it wasn't put together. You know, at that point, he was probably 6'2 range, very strongly built. The athleticism was there, but the polish, the skill, the jump shot was not. And it was pretty cool to see his development over the next couple years. And his jump shot really improved when he got to Louisville. He mentioned the higher arc on his jump shot, and he shot around 35% from three last season at Louisville. And I actually thought he was a better shooter then than he showed. And he continued to put time and time and time in to that jump shot. And this is a kid that has kind of taken the NBA by storm and has been tremendous with Utah, averaging over 18 points a game, as we mentioned, certainly in the conversation for Rookie of the Year, and just halfway through the season. So there's a long ways to go, but this is a kid that has just made tremendous strides over the past couple years, and it's a testament to his hard work because it didn't necessarily come easy. He put the time and effort in. Obviously, the athleticism was there, but that improved jump shot and the motor that he plays with, that stuff is pretty impressive. I want to shift gears to two players that I think are flying below the radar in college basketball in terms of their NBA status. And we're going to start with Troy Brown over at Oregon. And this is a kid that I think has a chance to go in the top 20 in the NBA draft, but he hasn't gotten a lot of talk. And maybe that's because he's on the West Coast. I don't know, but his name hasn't gotten brought up much. And this is a kid that was a five-star prospect coming out of high school, and he's really starting to hit his stride over at Oregon. He's averaging 12.3 points, a really impressive 7.6 rebounds, 2.9 assists a game. And I think the thing with Troy Brown, it's his versatility that really sticks out. And that's what stuck out in high school. He's a kid that stands 6'6", maybe 6'7", long arms, very good athlete, fluid, and he can impact the game in so many different ways. He's a guy that you can put the ball in his hands and say, go create. He's a very good passer, whether he has the ball in his hands at the point guard spot or he's over on the perimeter. He's a guy that can dribble drive, get into the paint, make a play, whether it's shoot a runner once he's in the lane or kick it out to an open teammate because he's got such impressive vision. Just had his career high against Colorado last week with 21 points in that game. To go with that passing and that versatility and his ability in transition, which I think is very good, I think he has quite a bit of potential as a multi-positional defender. I think he can guard multiple spots and will be able to guard multiple spots at the NBA level. This is a kid that continuously has scored in double figures for Oregon. He's scored in double figures up until the last game against Oregon State 10 times in a row. I think the area for improvement right now is his shooting from three. He's actually shooting it better than I actually thought he would coming into the season, right around 35% from three. But that's still an area that he's going to have to continue to show growth and progress. And that was his biggest weakness in high school. But I do think that he's already made some strides. I think that's a pretty respectable number considering where he was 2 years ago from a shooting standpoint. Now, he's had some pretty bad misses if you watch that Oregon State game and some of these other games. But I think he's showing improvement. This is a kid that's playing with a lot of confidence and it's continuing to grow, and I think he is a very good prospect, and I don't know that he's gotten enough attention so far this season. So Troy Brown, he's a guy that I think is flying a little below the radar, but he's a very good long-term NBA prospect, and if he comes out this year, I think he'd definitely go in the first round. Other guy I want to talk about is Boise State wing Chandler Hutchinson. Averages 18 points a game, 8.3 rebounds a game, 3.5 assists a game. He's in his senior season at Boise State, and this is a kid out of Mission Viejo, California. He was in the class of 2014, and I actually saw him play a couple times in high school and was very impressed. He's a guy that we ranked number 22 at the small forward position, number 89 in the country over at scout.com. I was there at the time, and West Coast analyst Josh Gershon was all over that one, took me to see him play. And at that time, he was 6'5", 6'6", long arms, thin,
fluid, but you could see the upside. He looked very young. He looked like he was still growing, and he did grow to about 6'7 right now. And I went through a bunch of tape of him this week, and he's really improved over the course of his college career from a shooting standpoint. As a sophomore, he was a 23% shooter from three. He's all the way up to 37.5 right now as a senior. Impressed with his shot mechanics, good rotation on his ball. I think he could improve off the dribble. His numbers off the dribble aren't great this year. Does have a little runner and can finish with both hands around the basket, but I think he's got very good size for the position at 6'7", long arms. He's fluid, and I think the concern is his strength right now. He sometimes has struggle finishing off plays, and I think he can improve his ball handling. But I think Chandler Hutchinson is a little bit of a sleeper, and I think he's a guy that has quite a bit of potential. Before I let you go, I want to talk about one more kid, and this is a guy that I'm not necessarily including in the sleeper category, but he's a guy that's getting some interest from the NBA levels, and that's Anfernee Simons. This is a kid that is still in high school. He's doing a postgraduate season at IMG Academy, and I've mentioned him on this podcast before. There's going to be quite a few NBA teams watching him this week. He's playing with IMG in New York this weekend, and then he's going up to the Hoop Hall Classic events, which is one of, if not the best, high school event of the season. And I know a number of NBA teams plan to evaluate him in both settings, so it's going to be a big weekend for him. This is a kid that has told me that he's going to consider going through that NBA draft process. I would actually be surprised if he doesn't go through that process, go to workouts, get some feedback. He's a top 10 kid in the 2018 class, standing 6'3". He is a combo guard that can really score the basketball. He's a very good athlete, but he's also a really, really good shooter. He was committed to Louisville and backed off his pledge back in September. Recently took an official visit to Tennessee, has a number of other schools recruiting him, NC State, a bunch of South Carolina, a bunch of other ones. So Anfernee Simons, it's going to be a big weekend for him and his potential draft stock, as all these NBA guys are going to take him in and evaluate him. I know that a number of them saw him earlier in the year at the National Prep Showcase in November and a couple different times throughout the season, but I think this is going to particularly be a good weekend. And I've come on here before and said that I think he probably needs another year just because he's so thin. I think his body needs to develop. But he is a kid with a lot of potential, so I'll be curious to see what kind of feedback he gets after this weekend and what the NBA guys are saying about him. Before I let you guys go, I want to make sure that you are subscribed to the Sidelines Podcast. You can do that over on Apple Podcasts and or your favorite podcast app. The other way to support this podcast is to leave a rating and a review. Would love it if you would do that. You can also shoot me a note over on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @EvanDaniels. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.